You can't start the car. Johnny has the keys.
Hello, hello, and welcome out there in podcast and YouTube land. You've reached, as it says, Johnny Has the Keys, a podcast where two guys talk about horror and science fiction movies and television, key influences that have contributed to that particular topic of the week, and then things that that movie then in turn referenced or influenced. If you're joining us for the first time, wow, so glad to have you here on our very, very, very last podcast of this season. So we're excited and it's interesting. If so you are returning, yes, you're seeing the same podcast. And it's a very, very last one, but we're glad you're back too. If you are new, please give us a review. Please give us a comment in the section down there. If you're watching on YouTube, maybe subscribe so you can find out when new episodes launch, because as we go into our little hiatus here, we'll have a lot of special stuff that comes out. And then we'll also have our season returning, you know, in the fall. Sort of thing. But my name is David. I'm here with my good friend Tim. Tim, how are you? What have you been doing? But wait, just say something and then I want to tell you my genre because I want to go first.
Okay. So, well, I just was thinking about our topic today and neither one of us could really have a background that kind of fits it.
No, not at all.
You have a sea of fire with skeletons in it and mine's just completely black.
Yes. Yes, because I have no flowers. I have no flowers to do for my background for this one.
Yeah. But so what about your genre week?
Yes. Normally we start by talking what have we done genre related in our week, hopefully in our respective genres, although I occasionally dip into Tim's horror world and he sometimes dips into my sci-fi world. I am on sci-fi this week. There was a movie, and I think I may have mentioned this movie before, but I ran across it again just scrolling and went, ooh, I remember that. I want to watch it again. So I did. It's a film that came out in 2018 called Anon. Do you remember me mentioning that to you ever? It's Clive Owen, Afia Bennett. It's directed and written by Andrew Niccol, N-I-C-C-O-L. Very unique spelling of his name. Started out doing commercials, but then switched to writing. And he has written such things as, Gattaca, The Truman Show, The Terminal, The Host, all of these. So done a lot of pretty good movies. This was a really unique movie. I think you would like it a lot. It's set in the future, but in that, all of our future looks like it's a 1950s film noir sort of world. But in the world, we're following a detective, of course. So it's a very film noir kind of story. Basically, Clive Owen plays a detective who, just like it says in the story, in the near future, private memories are recorded and crime has almost ceased to exist. So anything you do is recorded and monitored by the police, everything you do. So if you commit a crime, they automatically already have the evidence. So kind of tie it to like a pseudo Minority Report sort of thing. Minority Report predicts the future, but this actually records it. Anyway, the whole mystery around it comes into the effect when he sees a woman on the street and she's very intriguing to him and he kind of looks at her and as he turns a corner and kind of looks back, she's gone. She's not there. So he thinks, huh. So when he gets to headquarters, he goes, rewind. Would you hook me up and rewind me so I can, you know, show you this girl that I saw because she was pretty interesting and she's not there. As a matter of fact, then he goes through and looking through the bank cameras and the street cameras and everything else, and she's not there. She doesn't appear on any recorded device. And he thinks that's kind of interesting. And gradually she gets tied into a murder. He gets set up for the murder by her, obviously, because she can hide from all the cameras and the surveillance. So it's a really Philip K. Dickey kind of paranoia thing. But really cool. And I really think you would like it. It's called Anon, A-N-O-N.
I just looked it up and I noticed that it's got like kind of muted tones, like a film noir, like you said.
Everything's done in blues and grays. Black and white. Yeah. Almost in black and white feel to it, even down to the sepia tone of their costuming and everything. It's a really cool, cool movie.
Interesting.
I'd seen it once before. This was my second time Really like it. Highly recommend it. Everybody go see it.
And what's it on?
It's on Netflix.
Oh, yep. Very cool.
So you can watch it on Netflix.
Yep.
Well.
What about you? Done anything genre-esque?
I have, actually. I started to do my usual, you know, trek down horror world into Shudder or one of those other streaming apps that has one of those great horror films that I love to watch. And then I thought, you know what? This is the last episode. So we really should do our own genre-related topic and maybe recap season 5.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, because it is our last episode. We'll be off for usually 6 or 7 weeks before we start back in the fall or late summer. So I thought we would just do a brief recap because as we got midway through this season, I started feeling a little... Still, I don't know what the word is, not stagnant, but I started feeling like, is this a really good season? And now that I go back and look at it, we do a lot of stuff this season. Yeah. We went into space 9 times with Interstellar 2010, Galaxy of Terror, The Green Slime, Explorers, The Wandering Earth, First Men in the Moon, Total Recall, kinda, and Wall-E. All of those movies were in outer space.
True, yes.
We covered 5 sequels. And we don't do a lot of sequels, and this was a big year for them. Again, 2010, 28 Weeks Later, Candyman, 10 Cloverfield Lane, which is kind of a sequel, and Wes Craven's New Nightmare, which is also kind of a sequel.
Huh. Okay.
So, we had at least 3 creature features, including 20 Million Miles to Earth, Them, and Cloverfield.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, those are big creatures. I didn't include things like the mummy as far as creatures.
Well, that's why I was curious, because we had the mummy, I remember. We also had, he's not a creature, really, but Dr. Fibes is a monster, you know.
Absolutely. Kind of thing. So, yeah, I kind of categorized these in what I felt was their dominant category, I guess you'd say. Yeah, we've done this before with top fives. Yeah. We had 3 AIP films for you folks out there that don't know what that is. That is American International Pictures. These were films that were popular in the late 60s and usually with Samuel Arkoff. They usually starred Vincent Price. We had 2 with Vincent Price, both of the Dr. Fibes movies, as well as 1 with Boris Karloff, because we did the American cut of Black Sabbath, which was done by AIP. Yep. So... David and I, for those of you that don't know, are big fans of AIP and other production companies like Hammer. And sometimes we will identify a movie by their production company. And then those are 2 classic examples.
James Nicholson 3. And Samuel Z. Arkoff are the 2 founders.
That's right. It is Nicholson and Arkoff.
And they do a lot of Roger Corman. So,
they do. However, these 3 movies were not Roger Corman. I don't think we did a Corman. Oh, no, we did a Corman this year. It just wasn't his directorial. He produced it. We did Galaxy of Terror.
Galaxy of Terror, yeah.
Right. And I was that AIP? No, that's not AIP. That was too late. That was in the 80s.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Back to my list. We did 3 anthologies. Now, this was intentional. Sometimes these are intentional when I'm building the season. Sometimes they just evolve naturally. But this was one thing we wanted to do. And we hit Dead of Night, which could be the first anthology film ever from 1945.
Yep. And we talked
about that. We did one that – oh, and this was another thing that I just realized we did that I forgot to mention, and that's movies that we had never seen before. And one of them was Trick or Treat.
Trick or Treat,
which was great. It was a great little anthology film. And then we also did Black Sabbath, as mentioned before, and also an anthology film.
Yeah, I will say that's kind of one of the fun things of this season was the times when, you know, we would say, and when was the first time do you remember the first time you ever saw this movie? And we'd go, yesterday or last week when I watched it for the podcast.
I know. I mean, that was so many times.
Yeah. Yeah. this year.
I mean, I can think of at least six or seven for me. That's almost a quarter of the season.
Yeah, that you had said you never saw that movie before.
Right.
Yeah.
Like The Cell or mm-hmm. The Green Slime.
Green Slime.
Or Dead of Night. Yes, yes, all of those. We had three psychological films. We did The Innocents, which is actually more of a ghost film, but it's very psychological as well.
Yes.
As well as 10 Cloverfield Lane, to me is more psychological than it is a monster movie.
Yes.
And we did The Cell, which is very psychological.
Very, very.
It's mm-hmm. like a sci-fi version of Silence of the Lambs. Four. Double features. These were built into the season.
Yes.
We started with Dr. Fibes, the abominable Dr. Fibes, and Dr. Fibes Rises Again. Mm-hmm. We did The Blob, both the 1958 version and the 1988 version.
Yep. I remember that.
We did The Mummy, both mm-hmm. the Universal version and the Hammer version.
But we didn't do Mummy's Hand. You know, come on.
No. Yep. But it's on the list, so we'll get to it.
We'll get to it.
And we did Paranormal Activity and Wreck.
Oh, yeah.
Which was quite a fun double feature. Wreck, in particular, because I could tell it really fucked you up.
It did, and I had never seen it before. That was one of mine. I'd never seen it before. And, man,
yeah,
messed with my world. That was a good movie, I got to admit, horror movie-wise. Yes.
We dug up some forgotten treasures, including Alone in the Dark, of which we had no video for. I remember the cameras did not work that day.
Yes.
Galaxy of Terror and The Green Slime. Yes. I would consider all three of those forgotten treasure.
I would. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We celebrated a John Carpenter Christmas with Escape from New York, In the Mouth of Madness, and The Fog.
Yeah.
We covered two superhero films, including our first foray into DC with Superman.
Yes. Yep.
But then we also returned to Marvel with the cornerstone of the first three phases, which was Iron Man, last week.
Mm-hmm.
Two dystopian sci-fi films, Rollerball and A Boy and His Dog. We had some newer horrors with The Devil's Candy and Hush.
I would also say Drag Me to Hell, because I'd never seen that one either.
True. You know what? And that is 21st century, so you could put Drag Me to Hell in there, too. And then we had some newer sci-fi as well, including Alita, Battle Angel, which I had never seen, and The Wandering Earth, which I had never seen.
And one of those was a foreign film that I picked. Look at me.
I know.
And the other one was, I think that's our first anime, right? That was our first foray into anime in 5 years, I think.
It's our first foray into anime, but it's not really an animated film.
No, but it's based on a manga. It's based on anime characters, and they use that as the influence of the design. So, yes.
It was the first film we've done by Robert Rodriguez, too.
Which is wild. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah, because Planet Terror is on the list. I've just never got to it.
Well, and didn't he also do...
Dusk Till Dawn.
Dusk Till Dawn. That's the one I'm thinking about,
We're on the same train of thought here.
Always.
Imagine that.
Yep.
We had four foreign treasures, as you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Wreck was one of them, R-E-C.
Yes.
Also, The Devil's Backbone, The Wandering Earth. And I also lumped Black Sabbath in there because we did see the Americanized version of it, but it was originally an Italian film.
Yes. Boy, was it. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we did two devil movies, Drag Me to Hell and the Devil's Candy. Yeah, I know. With me here, just two. That's unusual.
What about Devil's Back? Well, it's a ghost story. It's more of a ghost
story. That's a ghost story.
Yeah.
We talked about that.
Not a demon. There's not a demon in it, even though it should be because of the title. But yes.
No, Devil's Backbone falls into the foreign group. We had four of those. Then the devil movies are Drag Me to Hell and The Devil's Candy. Then we did our second animated movie ever, as well as our second Disney movie ever. And that film was WALL-E.
Yeah. I think we should do I think for our Patreons, plug for Patreon out there, we should do a special bonus episode and pick our top three of this season. what we each think are the
of any season. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be cool.
That's not a bad idea. Yeah. Actually.
And say, we know you want to listen to the entire season, but these three are our favorites. Yeah. You know, each of our favorites. And it may end up being the same three. We don't know.
And then lastly, we had just the plain old weird and wonderful Phantasm.
Yes, we did. We had that.
Into our second venture into Don Coscarelli's directorial world. And what a weird and wonderful movie that one was, for me at least.
The weird, yes, I will agree. The wonderful, not so much, but, you know.
Okay. And since we are in a celebratory mode,
yes,
as far as celebrating season six, what better way to go out than a massive celebration like the one in a little Swedish country called Midsommar?
Look at you with that segue there. Very nice. Yes.
I don't know where to even start with this movie.
Well, maybe we could each talk about first time we saw it and how we saw
we
it
can.
Or when we saw it, whatever.
When or did we you... can do a synopsis or what have you.
Well, I definitely think we need to do a synopsis. Why don't you do the synopsis first and then I can, well, for those, so for
I'll
those
give
who
a brief synopsis. Yeah, for those of you that haven't seen this movie, you should probably tune out now because we are going to spoil the fuck out of it.
Yep.
It has been out for, what, 3 years now? Four years now?
Four.
So, yeah. So, y'all, it will be four this summer. So, y'all should have seen this movie by now. And if you haven't, what the fuck are you doing listening to us? All right. Before I get into feelings about the movie, let's just tell you what it's about. We have young Florence Pugh playing Dani, marvelous actress. She's in a bit of a not so great relationship. And she's got some baggage with her family. She has a bipolar sister. All of this is off screen. We never really see this. And basically, her bipolar sister sends her a cryptic message saying she's basically ending it all and taking the parents with her. And she floods their house with carbon monoxide from the garage. She starts both cars and puts a tube in her mouth and basically kills herself and her parents, leaving Dani completely orphaned and without family.
Mm-hmm.
Dani's boyfriend has been wanting to break up with her for a long time, but since she's kind of needy and just got some really heavy bad news, can't seem to do it. He doesn't tell her that he and his friends and fellow students are going on a... It's sort of a halfway vacation, half study to Sweden to observe the customs of a particular set of people known as the Horga?
Horga, yeah. H-A-R-G-A, but A has an umlaut over it, so it's Horga, yeah.
Okay, you're better at that than me. And he doesn't think she'll go, but he invites her anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys are like, and anyway, she ends up going. So they all end up in Sweden at this very familiar landscape. If you've ever seen The Wicker Man, it's not a Scottish island, but it is sort of a little paradise of sun and drugs and what have you, where they slowly realize they're all part of an elaborate 90-year-old religious ritual. And I'll leave it at that.
Mm-hmm. That was a good synopsis. Encapsulates everything, basically. You know, it's really Dani and Christian. It's really Danny's story. Christian is part of it, of course, because he is so tied to her. But it's basically her story all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
When was the first time you ever saw this movie? Wasn't last week.
I saw this movie a couple of years ago. I did not see it when it first came out. I can't remember if I saw it or Hereditary first. For those of you that don't know, they're both directed by Ari Aster. And I just remember you kept saying, oh, yeah, you need to see it. Oh, yeah, you need to see it. Mm-hmm. So finally, I rented it or caught it streaming somewhere on television, but it's been about 2 years. So my watching it this week was the second time I saw it.
Okay.
Because this is a very new movie.
This was my third. I had seen it originally just because I had been seeing a lot of hype about this girl that was supposed to be really good. And I liked the poster. The poster was really interesting because it's her crying with the wreath kind of thing, which is weird for a quote horror movie because it's so bright and so pretty and so nice. I had never seen Hereditary. I'd never really heard of Ari Aster at the time I first saw it and was blown away. I've seen it since again, and then this was my third watching. And I'll go on record already. I think I've went on record with her when we did Hereditary because we've already covered that movie, that I think this movie is better. I like this movie better than Hereditary. Yeah.
I go back and forth, but I do think this one is probably stronger as far as being a cohesive unit. There are parts of Hereditary that are like, where the fuck did that come from? You know, you're like, that was out of the ordinary. Whereas this movie seems to play out nicely without any questions.
It's interesting doing the research for this. There were I saw a lot of the opposite. A lot of people were reviewing it the opposite, saying Hereditary at least has a cohesive flow to it. This has weird stuff that happens for no reason. And I went, really? Did we watch the same movie? Now, one criticism I did see that I wanted to mention that I liked was they talk about the first 20. And by the way, if you have not seen this movie, and want to watch it, be prepared because it is long. It's 2 hours and 20 minutes, something like that.
That's the edited version. If you see the director's cut, it's almost 3 hours.
Right. Yeah. And for a slow burn movie like this, that can be tedious, I think, for younger viewers, let's just say, or people who don't like a slow burn horror, a dread horror kind of thing. But this one guy made a comment and I liked it. He said they spend 20 minutes at the beginning of this setting up this whole backstory of the suicide and murder and the fact that Christian isn't really consoling her. He wants out of the relationship, all this. And then they don't really touch on that again ever. And I went, that's actually true. That's a valid point. They don't go into their relationship again, really, because they are so separated and distant when they get to Sweden.
Well, I mean, there's a couple of key scenes where it's definitely addressed, but it's usually with just a sentence or a glance.
Yeah, or a look, like, why isn't he happy that I won the May Queen? You know, or, well, wait.
Really don't care about me at all, that right. kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's a very valid point that there's a lot of time in this and it doesn't really tie back into it. But I think that was a decision. And once you see the director's cut and why he cut what he cut, I think it makes sense of what he was trying to do. Because, I mean, my key takeaways of this movie is, first of all, Florence Pugh is a star. From the minute I watched this, I went, she is a star. She will go far. And this was before she had done, you know, Black Widow's Sister or any of that, or Don't Worry, Darling, all that. She is just so layered, so phenomenal, so wonderful in this. And the cinematography and editing are just,
it's epic. Mind-blowing. If I had to describe it, it's like opera. It's like seeing something on such a grand scale. The music in this movie, everything about it just kind of knocks the wind out of me. It's so stark and beautiful. I'm gushing. I know I am, but
no, I will gush too. And doing things he does, like shooting down a long, long, long table, and you're seeing somebody in the foreground and somebody way over here and somebody way over here. And as they talk to each other, the focus changes on their faces. Mm-hmm. And so we see who we need to focus on first and second and third. And you just go, oh my gosh, that would have taken forever to freaking set that up and film it. It's just, but it's giving away my biggest key, which is my biggest key to this is the most operatic, I guess is a good way to say it, or artistic horror film I have seen since The Shining. It is very Kubrick to me. It is very, very, very cinematic storytelling.
Oh my God, that's so funny. I'm going to put The Shining in there, but I have Kubrick down. But yeah. I had Kubrick down mainly because of the opening shots. The opening shots reminded me of like The Shining.
Oh yeah,
the way they were shot from at a distance, and they were stills or what have you. A lot of Kubrick in the beginning of this, especially.
Well, and I think all the way through, some of the shot structure he makes, he uses that a lot of times. He'll use that zero focus point of view so that she's right there in the foreground and she's totally in focus right in the very center of the camera frame, and everything else behind her is out of focus. You know, and if she turns and looks, suddenly they go into focus, and then it comes back and it's right on her. But she stays in the, even when she's walking, she stays right in the center of the frame. Yeah. Or he's shooting down the table to the two people sitting at the very end in the center, you know, on the chairs and stuff like that. He'll do entire scenes of dialogue from a distance with no close-ups and no intercuts. There's that entire scene when the other friend, Connie, is getting ready to leave, and the elder comes up and says, you know, your boyfriend left already. He got in this, a very small truck or whatever. You know, they have all that dialogue. We know that probably something has happened.
Something has happened.
But we don't know for sure. But Connie is going, right. He wouldn't do that. He wouldn't just leave me. And Danny is in the background at the edge of the building watching her. But all three of them are in the shot, and it's also got the building and the grass around them and everything. It's a great big long shot, and he never closes in on it. Just stays there for like 5 minutes while they have the scene. I just love that. That's just so cinematic.
Simon
so
is the boy's name that left, supposedly. Yeah.
Yes. Simon and Connie are the other couple.
And yeah. Mark's the obnoxious one. And who is the...
William Jackson.
Josh is the one that's the other student that wants to do the research project, the thesis, the master's correct. Thesis. Yes.
And Pele is the Swedish one who's the... You know,
who suggests they come?
Yeah, invite you to my town, to meet my family.
Come to my country. Yeah. We will sacrifice you.
Yeah.
Let me see if I got any production notes on here. Ari Aster is only, this is his second film. He's only done two movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everything else has been a short, including the new one that he's got coming out. It's called Beau is Afraid, and it has a stellar cast. It's got Joaquin Phoenix, Parker Posey, Nathan Lane, Patti LuPone. I mean, it's got a lot of people in it. But it looks like it's
that's actor type people. Yeah.
Right, because people, I guess, know this guy is going to be huge. But I also am not certain that it's a horror movie, because on IMDb, the only thing they have is that it's comedy, drama, horror, and mystery. So anyway, from what I understand, that movie is based on one of his shorts. And he did have some shorts prior to Hereditary and Midsommar. So Beau is Afraid was a short called Beau. And we'll see what happens whenever that comes out. Other than that, nothing. And I'm like... I really hope you are a horror movie director. I don't want you to start doing other movies. I want you to keep doing horror. But that's okay. I'll take what I can get. I mean, we've talked about how Robert Wise and other people are great directors and also do horror. So even though they don't just do horror.
Well, maybe he'll come back to it like Ty West, you know, sort of thing.
Yeah. Like I said, I don't think Ty West ever left. But
no, I don't either. But. That's what people
were saying. Production for this film was announced immediately after Hereditary was released.
because it was the next year, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
Because this was, yeah, it was 19 really close. And Hereditary was 18. Yeah.
I think so. Or was it 16? I can't remember. I don't have it in my notes. Ari Aster wrote both movies, so it is his vision as well as his story. It is the fifth A24. Now, see, we talked earlier about how we recognize things like AIP films, Hammer films, Universal films. Well, now we recognize A24 movies because they've put out some strong horror movies. And this
and
was
Blumhouse,
the fifth,
right? Or Blumhouse, whatever. That's the other one that's doing a lot of the lower.
Blumhouse is a newer one as well. And they did The Invisible Man, I think with A24. I think that was a joint thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is the fifth A24 film to be released nationwide without a platform release prior. The others were The Witch, Free Fire, which I don't know, and It Comes at Night, which I love and is on our list.
Yep.
Have not covered that yet. And Hereditary. So, Strong. I don't know what Free Fire is, but those others are strong to me.
Again, their cred in the first five movies is already better than New Line was when it started. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was Freddy. And that, I mean, actually, New Line started with Alone in the Dark before Freddy.
Yeah.
So we know that. This movie is set in Sweden, but it was filmed primarily in Hungary, which I found interesting. I've been to Hungary. I've not been to Sweden.
Because I'm assuming that everything that we saw was built for the movie in that valley, wherever it was, you know, from the whole sun arch entrance to the temple to the sacrificial place, all that. It looks like it was built for the movie. So,
yeah, even the bedroom, like the bunk house with all that elaborate wallpaper that looks mosaic like or whatever. Yeah.
The mural art.
And then just to give you an idea of what Astor sees this movie as, I wrote down this quote. He says it is a breakup movie dressed in the clothes of a folk horror film and that it is essentially a 2.5 hour study of one woman's emotional journey towards emancipation from a toxic relationship.
Yep. And that you can find that quote almost anywhere. I mean, he made that several times in the press junket. And again,
I love it. I love it.
And watching it this third time, I see having been in a lot of relationships in my entire career, I see this as more of a dysfunctional relationship than a toxic relationship. Is it good for either one of them? Probably not overall. Neither one of them wants to, you know, end it, even though they know they want to, sort of thing. But they don't, for whatever reason. I mean, at first I think it was, I'm going to end it. I got the impression, and a lot of this is what you have to read into it. It is not in the script per se. But I got the impression that Christian had planned on breaking up with her before he left for Sweden. Had everything been normal. But when your entire family decides to die in a murder-suicide, then you probably don't need to then dump all over her and destroy her because she needs some support. But he doesn't know how to support her. You know, and I think that's said a lot in that scene where she is literally wailing on his lap and he's barely even holding her because he really doesn't know what to do. And they kind of communicate that visually or physically. I think in researching it, two of the biggest themes in it are exactly what you said. The first one is fractured relationships in general. And the second one is how do you process grief? And that's why I think it ends with the image that it ends on, is because that's when she feels accepted and she feels like she has overcome
a new family,
the grief, a new family, somebody who actually screams with her. And when she's crying, rather than, you know, just holds her and looks at her funny.
You just touched on something, which is, you know, I mentioned that this is cinematic. It is operatic. It is just so huge. And it's also because of all the symbolism and all the layering and stuff that is in this movie. And you just mentioned some as well, as far as, you know, they're screaming with her and what that really means, as opposed to just being something very weird that you're watching. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And there's a setup to that earlier with, you know, with the cliff scene when that guy's in pain and everything else, they all scream with him kind of thing.
Yeah, they do it multiple times.
Yes. Yes.
They mimic Jack when he's having sex. They mimic his sex sounds as well.
Yeah. And hers when she's moaning. Yeah. They, you know, by the way, one of the most uncomfortable sex scenes in history, but I just got to tell you. Anyway.
Well, that's because there's a lot of women from room 217 standing around naked.
Yeah. Yeah. Just kind of, and in pushing you. Anyway, we'll get there. I've got that There's two scenes, pronunciations maybe? For this. We always say Midsommar because that is the British or European pronunciation. The American accepted pronunciation for this is Midsummer. So you'll see some reviewers and people out there who call it Midsummer, even though it has two M's and an A-R, not an E-R in it. And the actual name refers to the first day of summer or the summer solstice. That's what Midsommar is.
Yeah, that there's a bit of a, I don't know if it's a faux pas. I read this somewhere, I think on IMDb, that technically the May Queen ceremony would not be happening then because it would be earlier in the spring.
Correct. For the actual, yes. The actual solstice.
But they actually use it in the movie, which I like because it's got all the fertility baggage and shit that you need for what they're planning.
It's got some paganism there right over it.
Big time.
Scenes? You mentioned scenes. What are yours?
Well, I mean, the entire movie.
Yeah.
I mean, the first scene to my left, I mean, behind me, when they witness the senicide of the two members of the commune.
What I call the cliff scene. Yeah.
Yeah, the cliff scene, where basically the woman walks off the cliff, but instead of showing it first, they show Danny grab Christian's arm first. So it's almost like you're feeling her reaction before you even see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
That scene.
I thought it was very interesting, all of their reactions. One guy is throwing up. Simon is obviously just freaked out and saying, stop this, stop this, stop this. Danny is obviously upset and emotional and near tears and hysterics about it. And Christian kind of just covers his heart like, oh, that didn't feel good. Man, that's got to sting. You know, I was like, going, are they really making this guy this much of an asshole? But yeah, they are. They really are.
It's so jarring.
That scene had the equivalence to me of the scene in Hereditary with the head and the telephone pole.
Exactly.
It was just so
like 20 minutes in, let's see what we can do. Yeah.
What the is going on? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like we didn't know something like that was going to happen. I mean, come on. It's one of those instances where for most of this movie, we're kind of ahead of them. We know they're kind of doomed from the beginning kind of thing.
Well, it's like the Wicker Man. Same thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But we don't know in what way or how twisted it can possibly be.
No. No. If it was a witch movie, they would have been burned. We didn't know they were going to fall off a cliff onto a rock and they were going to show every grisly detail of it.
Boy, howdy. Boy.
Especially the man, because he lands on his feet.
And they get splintered into little pieces. Yes. Yes.
And like you said, Simon is freaking out because he's trying to prevent the man from doing it. The woman has already done it. He's screaming, no, don't.
Yeah.
And they don't care.
No. Nope.
They're all quiet with their hands up or whatever it is they do.
You know, and obviously it's a, you know, it's a family affair when you get to raise the big axe. Because the guy, you know, Sig, who is their female leader, obviously, and she kind of gestures when the guy's laying there, the old man's laying there moaning. She gestures. The guy holding the hammer gives it to another guy, and he comes up with like his whole family, and they each like take a little swing. It's like, oh my God. This is like, I get to pass the offering plate this week, Pastor. Yay. So good.
You just made me realize that that's another key to The Shining is that the weapon is a mallet.
Oh, yeah.
It's the novel, The Shining, not the book. But yeah. Yes.
I actually had a few scenes before that that imprint on me. Definitely the way he shoots the murder-suicide from the fireman at the beginning and then the whole follow the hose through the house sort of all in this semi slow motion sort of thing was awesome. Was so good. The mirror shots I thought were really great. By that I mean there's one in Danny's apartment when they both come back from the party and she stays in front of the door. Josh goes.
I know exactly what you're saying. Yes.
Christian goes over and sits down and he's reflected in the mirror. And they have an entire scene with just that lockdown. We never cut to him sitting in front of the sofa. We just see him in the mirror. And then later on, we're at the guy's apartment, probably Mark's, I think. And they have a mirror behind them. And Christian gets up and goes to the door and does this entire dialogue scene from the door. We never cut to him. He's just reflected in the mirror. And when Danny comes in, she's reflected in the mirror. Yeah, that was really cool choices that he makes in some of the
very cool choices. And it's not the only other mirror. There's a mirror in the scene where Josh gets killed because he goes up and is taking pictures of the book and he sees the reflection of someone come behind him.
Even though I think that's a window, not a mirror. I thought that was a window. But it's reflection. Yes, yes. Yeah. Very good. And very good point on that. The car upside down cut, even though we've seen that in a few other movies that we'll get to in Keys, but that whole we're literally entering a new dimension kind of aspect, the way he does it, is really cool.
Wait, say that again? The car upside down?
Yeah, when they first arrive, they're driving.
Uh-huh. The shot. Yes.
And the shot goes totally upside down, so the car is upside down. Then it turns around and we're just driving upside down until we get through the sign and into there, and then suddenly we reverse everything and we're back to normal kind of thing.
What is that? I mean, it's very Kubrick. It's very that woman that did Candyman, that movie we just saw, what we're talking about with reflections and camera work, that woman that did Candyman earlier this season, very similar. I don't know. I would venture to suggest that since this movie is so deep and there's so many layers, that is saying something. I think it's basically saying you are entering the doorway into something that's going to seem like another dimension, but it is reality once, you know, they come out of it.
Yeah. And there's no truth in the reflection is the kind of the, if you want to get heady about it, that's what I kind of got out of it. Cause both scenes are with Christian literally lying. I was going to tell you about the trip. Yeah, but I've said I might want to go, you know, all that. And then the next time, well, I invited her, but she's not going to go. Don't worry about it. I mean, I invited her and she did accept. Yeah, but she's not going to go. That's what he's saying in the mirror. Yeah. And then in the, there's another mirror when she's tripping and sees her sister in the mirror behind her. And turns, and then she looks and her face gets all, you know, like I've heard it happens when you trip. You know, it gets distorted and stuff. And she goes screaming out of the little outhouse kind of thing. That's another mirror shot reflection.
Well, since we're talking scenes, I was going to go into that.
Yeah.
There is drug use in this movie. I mean, as soon as they get there, they're doing mushrooms almost immediately. Yeah.
So do you guys want to wait for us or do you want us to wait?
Right. And then so she decides she'll trip. And the psychedelic effects in his camera work are some of the most realistic, not that I would know, psychedelic feeling. I mean, the way that the fauna undulates.
Oh, yes.
In the background and the way she sees grass growing out of her foot.
Yep.
And then later on in the movie, or her hand. And then later on in the movie, multiple times they drink a mysterious liquid that also gives the same effects of that LSD trip or whatever it is. And there are things I literally, you know, I said I only watched this movie twice, but I kind of watched it a third time because I went back and rewatched scenes because I heard you could see faces and I found one of them. I couldn't find any more, but I did find a face in the woods towards the end when they pick her up and are carrying her on the table.
That is
you
correct.
Can see a green face in the woods looking at them. Yep. And so, folks, if you're letting this movie go by fast, you will miss this shit. Go
or
back
if
and
you're
check
looking,
it out.
Yeah, if you're looking down and texting and Instagramming while you're watching this movie, you're going to miss visuals that are pretty amazing and incredible.
Yeah, and there's supposedly a face in the rocks when the suicide happens, but I couldn't find it.
There's two or three actually you can see, and it's when it's Christian and Danny and Josh, and you see the cliffs behind them. You can see faces in there, wow, too, in that shot. The undulation is amazing. You know, you're totally right.
It blows
right.
my mind.
And the two that get me the most, that look the most realistic, or so I've heard, from people who have engaged.
Because David and I don't advocate the use of hallucinogenic drugs, or at least not when we're over 50.
Right. when she looks down at her hands and there's grass growing out, that's cool. And then she looks up at the tree and the way the tree bark grows and is moving just on the bark and the limbs is just perfect. And then later on, I love the way he uses it because, like you said, there's a lot of hallucinogenic usage in this movie, from the teas they drink and the herbs and everything else. But even when she's the May Queen, the flowers on her wreath are moving and they're opening and closing and everything. And the centerpiece, the meat on the table, is
the meat
breathing
on the table
and moving. And
I'm like, is that turkey like swelling and changing? Yeah. I'm like, what the fuck is going on?
So
I mean, it
visuals.
Makes the whole movie feel like an acid trip.
Yes. And like when really he does. Is when he has been put under not only the love spell, but the other thing she made him drink, and he's not feeling well, and you can tell, and he turns to the guy and goes, what's going on? And the guy just goes and claps, and the whole background goes,
just go, like, reverberate.
Yeah, dude, I've been there. I mean, I've heard that that's the way it is. Yeah, but that's sort of thing.
Well, and the woman in that scene where he drinks the tea, she literally tells him what it's going to do.
Yeah, Maja.
She says, you'll lose your inhibitions and you'll be more free or whatever.
Oh, yeah. That's the girl that
serves
him. Yeah, the girl that serves him. That's another one of my scenes. The scene with Maja, the sex scene. That is the most uncomfortable sex scene I've ever seen in my life. It was just so bizarre and so.
What would you, I don't, would it bother you if someone came up behind and started pushing your ass?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I would probably have something to say about it. I love
I'd be like, look, I got this.
Well, I also got, and this is not, this is inference after three viewings. This is not in the script as far as I know. I didn't look up the actual character names or whatever, but I distinctly got the impression that the woman that Maja reaches out to was her mother, because she was an older lady, and she bends down beside her and holds her hand and kisses
while
her.
While she's having sex.
Yeah. And then looks at him, and that look he gives, like, this is awfully uncomfortable, lady.
And doesn't she start
moaning,
mimicking the sound?
Yes. Yeah,
she starts mimicking the sound. Yes.
And then the older lady comes around and starts pushing on his butt and everything. I'm like, going,
oh, that's the shining lady.
Oh, my God. I can't take this.
When he turns around and he's done, obviously, and sees that woman standing behind her, the first thing I thought was, oh, we're back in the Overlook.
Yeah.
Basically.
But that scene is great. The even the precursor to it, the way he does it with the sound effects, because you can hear the women chanting and making this really drone kind of sound. And the guy with the yarn mask on his face turns and opens the doors, and suddenly you see like Maja there laying down surrounded by flowers and 12 women, all of them buck nude. And it's like,
12.
Okay, then. Okay, this
is
going
to be interesting. Yeah, I counted them. I was like, there are 13 naked women in this scene and one naked man.
And one naked man. Like, and it is horror full frontal. You know, man, woman, whatever. We're doing it.
Well, and that's another thing. And I guess this is a good segue. I mean, we could talk scenes all day because there's so many because it's so beautiful.
Yeah.
But the main thing, and this is something that I'm sure people are waiting for us to touch on, is the controversy of this film. Because this film, like Hereditary and like The Witch, is like very bipolar, man. You either love it or you hate it. There is no in between. And a lot of people do not like this movie. They do not think it's a horror movie. They don't understand it. They don't know what's going on. You know, it is an acid trip, you know, in literally to those people. And I think the reason there are many, this is a horror movie. First and foremost, fuck anybody that says differently. This is a horror movie.
Yes.
It is a different horror movie in that there's no jump scares in this movie. Everything is slow and creepy and beautiful. There is no darkness in this movie, except for the beginning with the suicide of her parent or the murder of her parents. That's the only dark scenes in this movie. Everything else is bright and sunny and gorgeous. It's just not what people are used to in a horror movie. And it's another reason why I always loved The Wicker Man, because The Wicker Man's not a traditional horror movie either.
Yeah, huge key for this,
and very similarly themed. What's that?
That's probably the biggest key for this movie too, is The Wicker Man. But I agree with you. I also think that Wicker Man, this movie, and Hereditary, to an extent, what the cult is doing is bad for us because we're not in their society or their culture, and we see it as bad, but they're not treated as villains. They're treated as what they're doing is what they normally, every 90 years we do this.
Every 90 years.
You know,
and so they only see it once.
What happens, you know, and I'm assuming, based on inference, that every other year you still crown a May Queen, but you don't put a people in bears and burn them or whatever. You know, you only do that once every 90 years.
I guess. But from what I read, the senicide of the two older folks, that happens every 72 years. So, I mean, that could happen every year.
Yeah, that happens every time they
72.
Reach
72.
Yeah. Their lifespan is the seasons, too. It is spring, summer, fall, winter. In 18-year increments. So 0 to 18, 19 to 36, you know, and that sort of thing. And 72 is it. You're done. It's Logan's Run.
Bye.
Baby, your time's up.
It is Logan's Run. That's a great key. Well, I did not even think of that.
That's what I had at my keys. I was going to spring it later.
Oh, my God.
But it just came up. But, yeah, you know, but your time's up. So and you do it willingly. You know, you get into that disintegration chamber, or you jump off that cliff, or you whatever, you know.
You get the hammer in the face.
Yeah, hammer in the face. I mean, literally in the face. I think, but yeah, I agree that there could be controversy because this is not a standard monster movie. It's not a horror. It's not Paranormal Activity where there's a ghost or a demon or something that's plaguing people.
People think it's not scary, though. And it is. It's horrifying.
Yeah, it's very horrifying. I think it's, like I said, I like it better than Hereditary. I think it's scarier than Hereditary. I think there's more dread than Hereditary.
And in all honesty, I would probably lump The Witch in there closer to it than Hereditary as far as the controversy. Because people don't like The Witch because they don't think it's scary. And I'm like, why wouldn't you think that's scary? You know, that chick murdered a baby.
But those are the people that probably like Paranormal Activity and think it is scary. I'm just saying, you know,
or no Saw here. Or any, yeah, yeah.
I mean, the gore people should fast forward and enjoy the gore. You know, no, I mean,
there's plenty of it,
but
he doesn't shy
away from gore. As a matter of fact, I've seen stuff in this that's worse than things I've seen in other horror movies. And more, in my opinion, more painful and everything else. But this is by far a horror movie. From the very beginning, I mean, the very opening where she's worried because she gets this cryptic email from her sister saying, I just can't take it anymore. Everything's black. Mom and Dad are coming too. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
And so she keeps trying to call her and text her and not getting any response. Calls home, just gets the answering machine. Bob, all this kind of stuff. And you just know, you have this feeling of, uh-oh, this is not going to be good, is it? This is not, something's up. I don't know. That dread feeling continues. And it's like Hereditary. We don't know what's going to happen. We know something bad is going to happen. We just don't know how and when, sort of thing.
Yeah, the beginning reminds me a lot of Hereditary. I mean, obviously, it's the same director, but the whole suicide note and stuff, all of that reminds me of Hereditary.
Yes. Yeah.
I Okay. Controversy aside, like I said, I just wanted to address it because I know there are folks out there that literally hate this movie.
Well, they might want to. Maybe I suggest watch it again and see because.
Mm-hmm. Well, I say that just, about Hereditary to you.
Well, and I liked her. I wouldn't say Hereditary was bad. I even liked it when I liked it. When we reviewed it. The only three other scenes I've got are the nightmare.
Okay.
I thought the nightmare was a cool scene.
Nightmare's
in the way
great.
They did it. I think the Josh going in to photograph their scripture and what happens to him and how it happens and how it's shot and everything else, that was a great scene and a memorable scene that I can't get out of my mind. And then the ending, the way they do like the last 7 minutes of the ritual. And even with her covered in freaking cloak of flowers, crawling almost and everything in front of the burning building, you're just going, oh my gosh, this is so Wicker Man-y kind of feel, this paganism sort of feel to it.
Yeah, I was, I told you I went back and watched scenes. I had to watch the scene where Josh is murdered more than once because I couldn't figure out what it was about Mark coming back that seemed odd to me. And then I realized it's not Mark. It's somebody wearing the skin of Mark's face.
It is Texas Chainsaw. It is. Yeah. He has a Mark face on, a Mark mask on. That was.
I couldn't figure out. I was like, what is it about him that looks so different? Because it almost looked like him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was so closely. I don't know. It was fucked up.
Well, and the way it's cut, you're expecting it to be the Oracle, the deformed boy. That's who you're kind of expecting it to be from your setup, and he flips that on you, and it's not. I found out in research, it's actually the guy that Mark pissed off because he pissed on the tree, and his name is All Orf or something like that. And he's the guy, even at the table, Mark's looking at him going, is he going to kill me? And you won't say yes.
Oh, there's
yes,
a lot will. Of foreshadowing in this yes, too. Will. I mean, that adds to the layers. Let me ask you, and this was confusing to me. Are there two people in the room when Josh is killed? Because I thought someone was standing behind him that did the first hammer. And then the Mark mask guy walks up and he doesn't have any pants on.
Right. Correct.
Yeah. Okay. I thought there were two people in there, but it is a little confusing.
Josh turns around. Josh turns around. He sees somebody at the door, the silhouette, thinks it's Mark.
It looks like Mark without his pants.
And suddenly he is hit from behind by somebody who's over on the left. Yes. And I'm assuming that may be the Oracle.
And there were also two guys that were kind of staring at Mark when he said, is that guy going to kill me? So maybe it was those two guys.
Or one of the elders. It could have been one of the elders.
Or the guy that told him not to take any pictures.
Yeah, the elder guy. Yeah, that's what I call him the elder. The name of the guy in the mask is named Odd. O-D-D is his name.
Mm-hmm.
And he's in the Mark mask. And and just looking at him and blinking and all, it's just creepy. It was very Halloween, very Texas Chainsaw. It was just scary. Not good.
Yeah. They have selective inbreeding, too, to produce these oracles.
Correct. And just even mentioning that, we don't have to see it. We just know. And you go, okay. Yeah, now we're in deliverance territory. Yeah.
Well, Josh asks him. It's like he's doing his thesis. He's like, and how do you control your inbreeding? Or maybe it's not Josh. Maybe it's Christian.
No, it's Josh.
That asked him. Is it Josh?
Okay. It's Josh.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Because they're both supposedly doing a thesis, and Josh actually gets really mad because Christian decides to do one on the same subject matter because it's very coincidental that they're both there. All right. I guess we could move on to cast.
Sure.
I have a little, not a lot, because this is a new movie, new actors. We mentioned Florence Pugh plays Danny. I don't know how he casts these movies, but he's got a knack for it. Even seeing this new one, Bo, coming up, I mean, that's a great cast. And then in his previous movie, he had Gabriel Byrne with Toni Collette and those two young actors that are so good. In this one, he has Florence Pugh. She is amazing. And despite if you take out all of the cries and all of the screaming that she mm-hmm. does, neither her nor Christian speak for the last 25 minutes of this film.
Yeah.
It's all their face.
And those are your leads. And if you can't, if you can't as an actor pull that off, then this movie would have been terrible. She can say so much in seconds, visually and just facially. Just amazing. She is just amazing.
Again, her name is Florence Pugh. I cannot remember the character's name that she plays, but she's also the Scarlet Widow's sister. No, she's Danny in this.
Oh, I'm talking about Yelena.
In the Marvel world.
Yelena.
Yelena. And she is probably being set up to take the Black Widow's place in the Marvel universe. So
pretty much.
But I mean, she's doing a lot. I mean,
The scene in Hawkeye, the miniseries, where she's Yelena and she's eating the macaroni and cheese at the table is priceless. One of my favorites.
Yeah.
She's also Alice in Don't Worry, Darling,
which
movie
I have not
watched a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's a hot mess of a movie, right?
She was in one I have not seen yet called Lady Macbeth, which is not the Macbeth story. It's just in thematic of
about
a person,
an ambitious woman.
Ambitious woman. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so enough about Florence Pugh, I guess. Like I said, there's not a lot out of about her because she's so young. Jack Raynor plays Christian.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's underrated, too. I like him. I think he's very good in this movie.
I think he's incredibly underrated. I did not realize at all, even seeing this movie twice, and then I just recently finished Peripheral. Because he's the lead in Peripheral, along with Chloe Grace Moretz. So it's kind of like the same kind of siblings. But I didn't even realize it until I went back and watched it this time for the podcast. I went, wait, that's the guy from Peripheral. Oh, my gosh. Right. I didn't even get that. Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask you because I knew that he was, and I have not seen Peripheral, and I was going to ask you how he was in that.
He's
because
excellent.
I think he's fantastic.
Well, because Peripheral has a lot of great acting in it because you're also playing avatars of other people. So like Chloe Grace Moretz's character plays him in a video game, and in the video game, he's doing the acting, but it's her supposedly being him, and you believe it the whole time. It's really cool and well done the way they do it. He also has Shakespeare ties too. He has a movie that came out in 2015 called Macbeth. And he plays Malcolm. I'm assuming that's the one with, what's his name in the lead?
Idris Elba?
Michael Fassbender.
Okay.
He plays Macbeth in that.
Interesting.
So Shakespeare ties. Yeah.
Well, I mean, he's just a very dedicated actor, too. I mean, I read a behind-the-scenes thing where it was his suggestion that he be naked in that final scene when he's running around after the conception, I guess you would call it.
Yep.
It's in me. I can feel the baby in me. he's running around naked. He said that he thought there was not enough male nudity out there, and that if there were going to be a room full of 13 naked women, that he should be naked too. I don't know if they were going to try to film around that or not. And then, of course, he's running around naked and eventually covers himself. And that's, of course, before they sew him up in the bear suit and set him on fire. Anyway, his name is Christian, and he's writing a thesis about this pagan cult. But ironically, he ends up being dead and killed by the pagan. So there's symbolism in his name, Christian.
Christian. Yeah.
I mean, Ari Aster thinks about these things. I'm not sure if there's symbolism in Danny or not. Daniel, maybe?
Maybe. The lion's den, walk
That's
the fire.
Exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Biblical.
Yeah,
Another reason why there's not a lot I know about the cast of this film is because most of them are either Swedish or Hungarian. Wilhelm Blomgren played Pelle, who is the American exchange student or whatever that ends up he's the Swedish exchange student in America that brings them to Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
Josh is played by William Jackson Harper. He is the only American in this film. I'm not sure what nationality Florence Pugh is.
She's British.
Rainer is Irish.
And by the way, both of their American accents are phenomenal.
They're good. I mean, they're legit.
You would never, ever think that they were not American.
Mm-mm. Yeah. I don't know that I've seen her do a movie in a British dialect.
You only see her in interviews, I think, using her natural voice. Because as Yelena, of course, it's Russian.
It's Russian, yeah.
And Don't Worry, Darling, and this, she's American.
American.
So, yeah.
Well, Josh is the only American actor in the film. Rainer was born in Colorado, but he is Irish. Pugh is English. There we go. Will Poulter is English. And all the other actors are either Swedish, British, or Hungarian.
Yeah.
Probably Hungarian, I would say, mostly, because it was filmed in Hungary. Will Poulter played Mark.
he is who I call the Stifler of this movie.
He's the dork. And he's the one they were going to die anyway, but he still peed on a sacred tree.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I think is the reason he died, definitely, because he, you know, that lack of respect, sort of thing.
Right.
I mean, I remember him because he was in We Are the Millers, which I had seen prior to this. Okay. He's got a great part in Revenant. And I had just seen the first two movies of Maze Runner. Because somebody advised, you know, one of our fans said, you know, you need to watch Maze Runner. So I've watched the first two, I haven't watched the third one yet. But he's a character in both of those. So, yeah.
Okay. And then Elora Torchia and Archie Madikwe played Connie and Simon. I don't really know much about them at all. And honestly, that's it. I mean, I can name these people, but I don't know anything about them. They're all the Swedish members of the cult, basically.
Yeah, and a lot of them have continued to, I assume, to do what are Swedish movies. You can barely even pronounce their titles because they're in Swedish, sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't even pronounce Harga. Hargo? How did you say that?
Harga. It's Herga, like H. Think of a diphthong, air. Herga.
That's the name of the cult, of course. As far as awards, slews, and I mean slews of nominations for this film and
good.
Awards.
Good.
Primarily on the indie circuit, not just nominations, but wins, like almost equal. So just like the controversy of division of people that love and hate this movie, same with the critics. They either gave it awards or they didn't, but it's pretty much divided down the middle. The Academy of Science Fiction, I'm surprised it wasn't nominated for Oscars. I'm really, really surprised it wasn't nominated. Our friends at the Academy of Science Fiction, Fantasy, and Horror Films nominated it for Best Horror Film. The Fangoria Chainsaws gave it Best Wide Release Film and Best Director and Best Screenplay and Best Score and Best Kill.
The music's awesome. The music is awesome.
Yeah. And then it was nominated for Actress, but Florence did not get it, which I do not understand. I did not list any others because it was not nominated for the biggies like the Academies or the BAFTAs. But like I said, a slew of wins and nominations on the indie circuit. Surprisingly enough, here's another thing I should have added to our list of season six. Is that this movie is not on the 1001 movies you must see before you die. And that is a mistake.
That's a huge fucking mistake. It is on so many people's lists of one of the best horror movies ever made. In the 20th century, ever. And so I do not understand that at all. I mean, I can understand like Get Out. We liked Get Out. Get Out was one of those that I think was a great
movie. Socially relevant.
Very socially relevant, really established, you know, Jordan Peele. But I probably wouldn't put it on the 1001. I would definitely put this on 1001. I would put The Witch on 1001.
Me too. And I think The Witch may be on there. But I'm going to – that's – you talk about collating a list. That's what I need to do. I need to put a list of the films we've covered that are and are not. That's
yeah, that would be a cool one. For me.
Yeah.
To see.
This is not – however, St. Maud is – and St. Maud is the one you've heard me trash because I said it is pretentious and too artistic, whereas this one, to me, is not.
But see, I watched one reviewer on YouTube who said this one is. So pretentious, don't like it, blah, 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 nothing makes sense. I'm like, did we watch the same movie? Because this is like art, dude. This is like right in your face incredible.
And even if it's 3 hours long, I can't stop watching it.
No.
It's just that good. You're like, it's like being lured into a very pretty spider web.
Ooh, very well said.
You cannot get out.
And you're not only lured, you're not only lured by the performance, you're lured visually, of course, but you're also lured by, like you said, the music. Sometimes they'll have entire scenes that are just a tone. It's just like a, but you know, oh my God, something's going to happen. Something's going to happen.
Yeah, and what's with the Yellow Triangle building? Oh, that's kind of quirky and cute. You see it at the very beginning. Oh, that's the sacrificial building at the end. Yeah. Wow.
Actually, he says,
didn't see that coming.
That's a sacred place. You're not allowed to go there. And he goes, I'll be there later. You know, yeah.
So that's what I have for cast and awards. Yep. I've got a slew of keys.
Yeah, let's do some keys.
And then, actually, I maybe have a little bit of trivia first. Do you have any trivia?
This movie does hold up to multiple viewings. There's a lot of hidden symbols. There's a lot of foreshadow, like you said. There's a lot of things that happen from whether, you know, even in the beginning, when after the suicide stuff, when Danny is crying in her bed, she's actually not crying, but she's in her bed awake and obviously still mourning. The painting above her bed is a bear and a little princess girl.
It's I forgot about that.
It's kind of like, there you go. That's the thing. If you watch the normal release version, the one that the traditional standard one, not the director's cut.
That's the one I watched. I watched the 2 hour and 25 minutes.
The opening of it is like a 50 second, 1 minute picture of a mural. And the mural is the entire movie. It is on the left. You have her parents. They're dying. There's a skeleton there, a skull there. They're wrapped in tubes. You go over. You even see Pele up in a bush making notes in a drawing book. Looking down at them, you see the couple fall off the cliff. There's a bear. There's the May Queen. Everything is in that opening mural. The entire movie is there.
I think I just ate her pube.
There's a scene where, yeah, she goes, well, and I think they're showing it to Connie and Simon. They're showing the banner is what I call it, but it's the love potion banner. And it shows exactly what the girl does to get him to fall in love with her or get him to pick him, select him.
Yeah, we didn't mention it, but when you see all their drinks, it looks like they're drinking lemonade, but his is slightly pink.
Yeah, his is always darker. Yeah.
Yeah, it's insinuated that it's her menstrual blood that's what's tinted his drink pink.
Yes, that's highly, highly.
Yeah. And then he does eat a meat pie and pulls a pube out of his
Correct.
Mouth. I thought it was going to be a bone. The first time I watched this movie, I thought, oh, that's Josh. They're eating Josh. Or whichever one, Simon. The one that was missing. It was Simon.
Well, both Simon and Mark were missing.
Right. Yeah. And I was like, oh. And I think I think Mark was still there.
No, this was when only Simon was missing. Yes, you're correct. Simon and Connie.
And because I thought, ooh, they're cannibals. And then I thought, no, that's too cliche. Ari Aster would not do that.
Right. So he just leaves it. He just leaves it. So maybe not.
Right.
There is Like I said, there is a director's cut of this. It's almost 3 hours long. One of the scenes in it that I really liked that I thought would work, but I know exactly why he didn't pick it. Anyway, it's after the suicide scene, and it's actually at night. And they mention at the very beginning of the scene that we only have a few hours to do this particular ritual, because I guess the way the night is at that time of year, there's only a few hours of night and everything else is day. But they're by a river, and they do this ritualistic kind of Swedish, and they throw in a tree, this incredible tree. And they go, now we've honored the mother, and it's all in subtitle. We've honored the mother, blah, blah, blah. This one guy stands up and goes, I don't think the mother is satisfied. The mother needs more. And she goes, well, what can we give it? We've already given it all of our fruit and our best yielding tree. And they go, the mother requires something else. And Danny and Christian and Ja, everybody are there watching all this. And this little boy steps up. He's probably like 10, 12. And he's covered in pictures of people, like framed pictures are hanging off of him of, I guess, members of the cult or whatever, or those the community. Anyway, he volunteers his tribute, essentially, and they manacle his ankles and put a big stone on him, and they're both picking him up, these two guys, and they're going to throw him in the water. And Danny stops it. Danny comes, says, no, 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 no. And another person steps up and says, no, she has shown her bravery. That's enough for the mother. Or he has shown his bravery. That's enough for the mother. So they let him go and unmanacle him, and he runs to his mom and they hug. Da, da, da. And Danny looks at Christian, because as she was, before she objected, she's looking at Christian. He's not doing anything. He's just like fascinated by this. And she's like going, and finally she steps up and says, no, 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 don't do this, blah, blah, blah. So then I say that all because that's a precursor for this next scene, which is like probably 7 minutes long. And it's the longest scene and the most dialogue they have in the entire movie. And it is literally them saying everything. Danny is going, we need to leave now. And he goes, you don't understand. We don't understand this because it's a different culture, but that's why we're here. We just need to kind of learn to accept. And she goes, they are killing people. Don't you understand that? This is not a good place to be. Regardless of their culture, we don't need to be here. And they have this big, huge fight. And then she goes, okay, well, then I'll just put it this way. I don't want to be here. I am going to leave. And he goes, all right, then you can leave, but I'm staying. She was, really, you're going to stay? And then they get into this huge thing about, you've always wanted to leave. Why haven't you left the relationship already? We're already in the area of a relationship where we should have already been broken up and separated. And he goes, oh, don't use pop psychology. I mean, they distill the entire movie in this 7 minute scene. And it ends with him literally walking away from her and leaving her alone. And she goes, you're really leaving me? And he just keeps going. And she goes, Christian, and she's left all alone, and he holds on it for like forever and then cuts out of that scene. And I thought,
now what's the next scene?
The next scene after that is the next morning, which is the normal scene we get.
May Queen morning.
After the suicide. No, it's before May Queen, because it's after the suicide.
Oh, okay.
And thinking back, seeing it this time, I know why he did it. It's too on
the
nose.
I know why he did it, too.
It's too on the nose. It's giving too much away and not giving enough artistry to the film. And it's dark. It's a really dark, silhouette-y, shadowy scene, as opposed to every other.
And it contracts. It's
every other thing has been bright. Yeah.
Yeah, I completely understand why he took it out. I think it's great. it's not necessary.
But yeah, but it's great to see. And their performances are really good. I was just I can understand why you did, because, you know.
Yeah, must have never seen that. I must have never seen this uncut version. I wonder if those scenes are on YouTube.
You can actually find them on YouTube. You can find the uncut scenes. Yeah.
Cool. Cool. I will check that out.
Trivia. Do you have any other trivia?
I do. This film was released in Sweden, and rather than eliciting fear in the audience, a lot of people laughed and thought it was a black comedy.
Really?
Which I find funny, because there are moments of Wicker Man that are extremely funny, and I could see the same going for that movie as well. I've already mentioned about the Maypole being a little out of place as far as timeline. I did this because I saw it in my notes before I watched it, but did you pay really a close attention to the meal scenes? Did you realize that the people were not eating?
Correct.
There's nothing on their forks when they're putting it in their mouths.
Yeah. Also the way they do that so that they don't really talk to each other when they eat. It's mm-hmm. a very weird kind of thing. And the fact that all of their tables are in rune symbols.
They're like
all of the tables are built like a
at
rune.
At angles. Yeah. Yeah. It's very strange.
And there's lots of runes in this. And things that you know, you have to do research to find out about. You wouldn't normally know them unless you know a rune or something. Like the R rune is for rebirth and stuff like that. And that's the way the food table is set up. Christian, the robe that he wears when they give him the snort of smoke or whatever before he goes in to do the sex scene, the runes mm-hmm. on his breast are of death. That's what the runes are. So.
And then the girl, Maya, I think is her name, Maja.
Yeah, Maja.
That he sleeps with or has sex with in front of everybody. She puts a rune under his bed.
Yes.
That's a love rune because mm-hmm. Josh sees her do it and he takes it to someone, Pele, I think, and asks what it is.
Yep. Yep.
And Pele tells him it's a love rune.
So lots and of runes in it.
And there's one scene, and I don't know what this one is. Maybe you do, where a woman kneels in front of a rock with stuff on it, like hieroglyphics, and puts her hands on it, bloody hands.
Well, that's the R rune is what's there. And that's the Sinicide couple. You remember that starts and they cut their hands. They cut that's his, right. and then they yes. cut hers, and they put their hands on the stone before they go up to the top of the cliff.
But that's a rune, too, isn't it? What is it?
It's a big runic statue like, or monolith kind of thing. And there's one on the ground, too, that initially interests Josh, and he's looking at it trying to figure out some of the symbols on it. And all done in those circles with the symbols coming around, and all. It's very... Yeah. I didn't know until this past time that Aitastupa, which is what they refer to the scene. By the way, that was a weird scene to me when Pele said, tomorrow morning we're doing the Aitastupa, and Josh knew what that was and Christian didn't. And he said, do you really know what's happening? He goes, they're not really doing that, are they? And Pele just kind of smiles and lays down. And he goes, and he just kind of smiles. And I went, why are you smiling if you know what this really, because that really is sinicide. That's a real Swedish term. It's a Swedish ritual where they commit suicide.
Right. Well, sinicide can mean more than one thing, but it is killing old people.
Correct.
Whether they do it voluntarily or whether they are executed or abandoned sometimes. Yeah.
Yes. But if he knew what it was like, he's just going to nap and go to bed and everything. It just seems weird. But anyway, I didn't know it was a real thing. I thought Astor had made it up for the movie, but he didn't. It's a real Swedish ritual.
Sorry, I'm jotting down another key. I just thought of when you were talking about
please
that.
Please do.
One more trivia.
Yeah.
I was talking about them paying attention to when they're eating and that they're not eating. But in addition to that, did you notice a lot of the stuff on the table looked rotten and not like something edible at all?
In places, yeah. Especially like when they do that trippy moving on it and it's breathing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So strange. So strange. And then last trivia I have is Ariana Grande, pop star and little diva herself, is a huge fan of this movie. And she called it her favorite film of 2019. She tried and failed to buy the May Queen gown used in the film at an auction. So someone outbid her for it, I guess. She also threw a Midsommar themed birthday party for herself on her 27th birthday. I wonder if she got Jack Rayner to come sleep with her.
Or did they, put somebody inside a bear suit and set it on fire?
I don't know. Maybe.
That's weird.
It is weird.
Yeah.
Okay. That is all the trivia I have. So we could go on to keys if you are ready.
My first key is the Witch.
The Witch?
The Witch by Robert Edgars. Just because it's basically a female's story told all the way through it and her point of view almost exclusively for the whole movie. Mm-hmm. And we don't find out the big twist until the end kind of thing. So that's, it reminded me of that. It's also a very slow burn story. That's Anya Taylor-Joy, as opposed to
another Pugh. Prodigy as far as acting. Yes.
But another one that has just come about in the past, like, you know, 10 years and blown everybody away. Yes. So
Other one is Jennifer Garner. And I keep telling you this, but you've got to watch Jennifer Garner in something. No, okay. Is it Jennifer Garner? It's Julia. Excuse me. Julia Garner, not Jennifer.
You're talking about
Garner.
The girl from the series Ozark. Yeah.
Yes. And she's also in a lot of stuff now, just like Anya Taylor-Joy. She's in a lot of stuff now. Okay. Yeah. She's phenomenal. She won Emmy 3 times. Three years in a row.
Well, then she's probably good. Yeah.
Yeah, she's pretty good. I've already said The Wicker Man, because there is no bigger key really to this movie. If you're going to go back into the canon of horror, you know, 1973's The Wicker Man is obviously about an island with pagan rituals. And
yes. And the protagonist gets killed at the end.
At the end. Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. By fire.
Yes, by far.
But another thing that this is very attuned to, and I'm not as familiar with the movie, although I have seen it, but the short story, The Lottery.
Shirley Jackson.
They actually have like a bingo lottery thing machine in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Where they pick the cult member that's going to be sacrificed if she chooses him. They give her the choice between one of theirs and one of hers, and we don't see her do it, but she picks Christian.
Yep. So, another really, I think, cool directorial and writing decision. That he doesn't even show her point to him or whatever. I mean, we just...
Well, can't. You can't see her arms.
She's in the flower gown thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Lottery is a definite one. I've got, of course, Kubrick we mentioned, but for several reasons. One, for opening scene, like you said, which is so very cryptic. And I'm talking about like all the snow facade scenes are very Kubrick kind of feel.
And there's still shots of like scenes, like scenic stuff.
Yep.
Also when they go to Hungary or Sweden.
The nightmare itself is very Kubrick in the way it's done and the way images are folded on top of each other kind of thing.
The nightmare reminds me of Ken Russell.
I can see that too. That's a good one.
There are flashes in it of like subliminal stuff. Like there's a flash of the smashed face from the woman that jumped off the rock.
Yep.
And there's a flash of like her sister or whatever. And it's very jarring, like to me. If I had to pick two directors, it'd be Kubrick and Ken Russell. Smash them together, and you got this movie.
And Astor has even said this. This was an Easter egg. This was intentional. This is a reference to The Shining. Danny's blanket on her bed is the same pattern as The Shining carpet.
Oh, I didn't pick up on that.
Yep. And we see it several times. It's not just like a one shot you have to catch. It's there several times when she's in bed. You see the same pattern as the carpet. And he did
that on Sweden or at home?
In Sweden. In the big room with everybody else. Her blanket.
With all the bunks.
Her blanket is the floor pattern. That kind of C open pattern from the carpet of the overlook. Ari Aster has said his direct influences on this movie were breakup movies, and the ones he listed were Eyes Wide Shut, Scenes from a Marriage, Possession, and Modern Romance. He said all four of those were direct influences on the writing of this movie before he started working on the directing it.
You said Eyes Wide Shut, Possession, and what?
Scenes from a Marriage.
Scenes from a Marriage.
Uh-huh.
I don't
know Modern Romance.
I had Modern Romance. I do have him quoted as saying that. I did not have the others, though.
Yeah, this was an interview I think he did for Vanity Fair. Scenes from a Marriage is fairly new. It came out in 21.
Okay. And Modern Romance is an Albert Brooks movie from the 80s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's probably a comedy if it's Albert Brooks. But I have a quote from Astor where he said that that Modern Romance was an inspiration for Midsommar, but he also said it's the Wizard of Oz for perverts.
Yes. I've got that too. You know,
so that's the quote I lifted. I didn't see the other ones, but that's cool because I like having other keys.
And he talks about, you know, it's a young girl exploring a new world. She has her friends with her, that sort of thing. There's also three different scarecrows in this. Mm-hmm. So there are Easter eggs that are in this. One is there's an actual literal doll scarecrow that's in Danny's room on the cabinet. And in Mark's house, when Danny comes over to say she's going to Sweden with them, there's a framed picture of the Wizard of Oz scarecrow on the refrigerator.
How funny.
Yeah.
And then Mark ends up being a literal scarecrow.
Correct. They stuff him because they've pulled his face off to use it for something
I don't understand. I was going to ask you this, too, before we keep going. Two things I don't get. All right. Obviously, they decapitated Mark or took his face off, because when they bring him in to be burned, he's very lightweight. It's just like his face on a dummy. So what did they do with his body? We don't know, I guess.
Well, again, it's an implied that could be part of the food that they were eating.
That's true. Well, and the other question I have is, why does Christian see Josh's foot sticking up out of the ground?
That one made no sense to me. I mean, that's just like kind of telegraphing, hey, we kill people. I didn't understand that at all.
He needs to know this now. How can we make it happen fast?
Yeah. So now, there was a rune carved into his foot.
I saw that.
So maybe the rune meant something, and we should look up what the rune means, maybe? But it obviously is something ritualistic, but it made no sense to me because that would be like a direct telegraph to, oh, by the way, oh, and don't go in the chicken hut either because there's a Viking ritual in there, dude. So,
well, actually, it just reminded me that at the very beginning of the movie, they plant some meat and put some seeds over it and bury it in the dirt. Mm-hmm. So they could have also been burying meat as some kind of ritual as well.
Oh, yeah.
And that may be where that plays in.
Maybe.
And I forgot to mention that. I was going to mention – I'll mention it in a second because I'm going to get to it. Well, I'll go ahead and mention it now. Silence of the Lambs. That scene is right out of Silence of the Lambs. It's called the Flying Eagle. Is that what it is?
The Blood Eagle.
The Bloody Eagle.
Yeah.
And that – there is a scene where Christian – right before he gets paralyzed, goes into a room and finds the body of Simon, which is being kept alive, but his back has been cut open, the ribs removed, and his lungs are outside his body. But you can hear him breathing slightly.
Well, because that's that was a Viking torture ritual they used to, and you were kept alive while it was happening.
And this is not a horror movie.
Yeah. And that's another reason I think why Simon doesn't become one of the candidates at the end, because he's still alive, essentially. He has flowers in his eye holes.
He is in there. They show his body with the flowers.
Oh, that's right. Because there's nine.
The girl, Connie.
There's nine of them. Yeah, that's right. You're right.
Yeah, because there's four and four, and she picks the odd.
Yep.
And it ends up being Christian. But again, straight out of Hannibal Lecter playbook. I mean, you couldn't get more Lecter than to perform something like a Bloody Eagle on a victim.
Yep. Very Hannibal Lecter. That's very good.
Yeah, so that was my my key. But going back, obviously Hereditary is a key to this movie. There are scenes in the beginning that are very dark and remind me of Hereditary with the murder-suicide of her parents. But acting alone, I mean, Toni Collette, it's largely thought that Toni Collette was snubbed for an Oscar for Hereditary.
Yeah, because it was a horror movie.
because it's a horror movie and she's mm-hmm. a fantastic actress. But I mean, then he does this movie, which is Florence Pugh, is just as fucking strong. I mean, they mm-hmm. are equals as far as mega actresses. And another thing about Hereditary in this movie is it's like there are twin movies. Mm-hmm. It's like there's the dark movie and there's the bright movie, and they're both seriously sick, but opposite.
Well, yeah, because like bookends. It's dysfunctional families and protagonists that are thrown, that are surrounded by a cult that at the end of it comes to fruition.
And you one's know, dark and one's light.
One's dark and one's light. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
one's male, one's female.
What if he never does another horror movie? I mean, if he didn't do another horror movie, I guess I'd be okay with it. Because he has like two landmark horror movies that are actually related to each other.
Yeah. Yeah. And if everybody wanted to, you know, squeeze a trilogy out of it, you could do these two and The Witch and all together as a trilogy. It'd be cool. You'd be depressed as hell when it was over, but you know, there you go.
Really?
I've got Clive Barker. Again, because it's folk horror, which I always bring up Clive Barker because he always reminds me of folk horror. And that whole, you know, you're in this modern conveyance like a car and you suddenly find yourself in a place where they're, you know, eating flowers and stuff in the middle of a field, Wicker Man-y kind of feel to it.
Yeah. So. I mean, it's funny that you relate Clive Barker to folk horror. I mean, I can think of two folk horror short stories he did and most of his other stuff's urban and I don't get it.
The folk horror one though has so imprinted on me. That one where
me too.
Comes over the hill and the two towns are fighting by building giants out of themselves.
Out of bodies. Just yes.
So.
It's very, very Wicker Man-y. Yeah. Yeah.
Very imprinted on me.
It's a story and I'll put it in here maybe in the hills. It's called In the Hills, the Cities.
And Rawhead Rex to me is very folk lore.
That's the other folk horror. That's the other one that I was going to say is the only other folk horror one that I can think of off the top of my head. And it is buried under a rock that is probably a ruin when the farmer ends up releasing it. So that's definitely folk horror. But I mean, other ones like Midnight Meat Train takes place on a subway, Candyman's at the Cabrini Green in Chicago. Yeah. I'm like, those are not folk horror at all.
No, I just always.
I mean, maybe a little. If you go into the legend of Candyman, I guess it could be considered folk horror. But,
well, again, I'm also influenced by Nightbreed. Nightbreed is a very, to me, folky feel to it, even though it's monsters and it's modern setting. But for some reason, it just has a folk foreign feel to me. So,
have you ever seen the uncut version of that?
No, I haven't. That'd be one to watch.
We should cover that. Yeah.
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 I'd like to do that.
Okay. Yeah, because they kind of butchered it, and Clive restored it. I think Clive restored it. I'm pretty sure. And it's long. It's like 3 hours.
Okay. Yeah.
And David Cronenberg's in it.
He's the villain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. You mentioned The Shining, Logan's Run, which I didn't even think about, but you know, they kill them when they turn 30 and this, them when they turn 72. Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the guy's wearing a guy's face. Yeah. This one I just jotted down while we were talking about runes, and that's Curse of the Demon. Which we covered a few seasons back with Dana Andrews.
And he curses the guy with the runes. Yep.
Right. There are runes in that movie as well.
I also have classics. I've got fairy tales in general because this could, you know, just like it's The Wizard of Oz, it could be a fairy tale. You know, this young princess who doesn't know her own destiny, who's, you know, forced into this situation kind of thing. And the Pied Piper, because that's what Pele is. He essentially leads them over here, you know, literally and figuratively. You know,
he's awarded for having such insight.
Yeah, he gets the green wreath. Nobody else gets the green wreath. You know,
right? Yeah.
So, yeah.
This I lifted from IMDb. Both of Ari Aster's feature films so far have included gruesome shots of bashed-in faces, cults, old people in the nude, exploration of grief and relationships, intense depictions of sorrow, and shots where the camera films straight down.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you need some signatures of Ari Aster, that's what you got right now.
He's good with his drones. He really is.
You mentioned The Wizard of Oz and all the scarecrows in this movie. The scarecrow was afraid of fire and made of straw that would burn quickly. This foreshadows Christian.
There you go.
Fate of being burned alive and surrounded by straw with bodies arranged like scarecrows.
Makes sense. I have a personal one, which is...
Okay, go ahead.
Even though it's Texas Chainsaw in that he's wearing a mask of somebody else, when Nitch cuts that shot of the mask, it looks like the shape. It looks like William Shatner, you know, with the way the hair is just on top, kind of straight like Mark's was, and it's a very flat sort of face kind of look to it. It looks a lot.
You can see slight red around the eyes.
Yeah. Well, and he blinks underneath the eyes too, which is creepy. Mm. Sort of thing. But that's, you know, it reminded me of the shape's mask. So.
You call it the shape. I call him Michael. Okay. You call it maize. I call it corn.
Yeah.
Here's one for you. The Wicker Man 2006, not the 1973 original with Christopher Lee, but the 2006 version with Nicolas Cage, where the villagers actually put him in a bear suit as well.
Hmm.
I've not seen this, I don't think. If I have, I repressed it because I like the original so much.
I did not see the remake. Yeah.
Yeah, I might need to see that because I don't think I have.
I did think I had a cool idea going into this rewatch, my third watch. It was I was going to say, okay, let's see if they're cannibals or not, and if there's anything that gives or telegraphs, you know, that they're eating at least parts of the victims kind of thing.
Oh,
right?
They are.
Well, but nothing really gives it away because I thought, from what I remember, the first two times watching it, I remember other than chickens, you don't see any other animals. Even when they're pulling the carriage, it's the girls pulling the carriage. But then they had two shots with cows. And I went, okay, well, then forget it. That idea sucks. I thought it was a cool idea, but it didn't pan out. But there was that.
I was looking for it too. I didn't see it. But like I said, what is the deal? And this is, if I had a bit of a gripe, and could identify with the folks that say this movie makes no sense, I don't understand why they're not eating anything. I think that's a little strange.
I think it would have taken them 3 damn hours to set up the freaking tables. Everything is just so precisely. It's like Downton Abbey. You know, everything is so precise on those tables.
Times 20, because there's so many people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. From the skull glasses to the tea glasses to the plates. And it's just, I was going, my God, now I'm too tired to eat. I set up all this freaking
silverware. How would you like to be a set decorator?
Oh, my gosh. So precise.
Yeah.
I was thinking that too in so many of these, those long pastoral shots, like way over there in the distance, you've got these little kids playing like jump rope or something. Oh, they're folding towels in this kind of spin ritual way. And then you've got a stream of kids who run and they're chasing each other and you're following them. And then you pass Danny who gets there, but behind her, there's 20 people doing this dance kind of Tai Chi movement
yoga
thing.
Yeah.
Da da da. And we change focus to them. Then we come back to focus to her. Then she moves over here and she goes off to talk. And I went, that's all one freaking shot. You'd have to reset that. Have all those little kids in white run way back over there and get ready. Run another mile.
I did read something. I did not put it in my notes. And I think it was Jack Rayner that may have said it, that Ari Aster was just a genius. Or that not so much of a genius, but a leader. He said, you know, first of all, it's his second film. He's on location in a foreign country with like 73 people and all these things you're talking about that he's doing. He is ringleading all this. Yeah. I bet he didn't have a lot of second unit help or anything.
I'm curious if his cinematographer was the same as Hereditary.
Because I wouldn't be surprised.
I'll look it up because I would not be surprised if they were the same. Because they were.
I'll tell you a little story while you do.
You do.
I mentioned that Jack Rayner, was the one that suggested he be nude.
Yes.
Sorry, there's a lot of sun coming in my window all of a sudden. This guy's scary. The reason he suggested this was there were a couple of reasons, but this one that I lifted from IMDb says that he had recently watched The Last House on the Left, the original 1972 Wes Craven movie, and that like many films in the horror genre, female characters are often disrobed, humiliated, and or assaulted before their demise. He felt it was due time that male characters be made to suffer the same indignity. Which I think's cool. I don't know how they would have filmed it with him in clothes. I think it would have looked weird because
it would have. He would have had to like naked. Pull up shorts or do something. I mean, it wouldn't have worked.
Or just not show him below the waist, I guess.
Also, I the fact that, you know, he had blood on him from her, so that was a was a little bit of a thing too. Yeah. You know. Same cinematographer as Hereditary.
Okay.
Yep.
And then the other reason I also knew that Jack suggested this was he said it was the last day of filming and everybody was really stressed out and done. And he was trying to just make things go easy and I don't know, lighten the mood by being naked, I guess. I don't know.
So he was final guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Or a final boy. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then I have an anti-key.
Okay.
There is another Danish, it's a Danish film, and it's a cult classic called Midsummer, but they are not related at all. So there's another movie out there called Midsummer.
I actually had my final key is one I found that said that there actually is an American Midsummer movie, okay. And it's called Midsummer, and it's about a bunch of kids who – I was going to look it up real quick. Okay, look, it came out in 2003.
It's the same one.
Christians – the lead character's name is Christian. His sister commits suicide. Why? After his four friends graduate secondary school, they head off to a Swedish cabin for Midsummer as previous years and strange things happen.
This one is set in Sweden, too, but it says that this – oh, wait a minute. I've got – despite sharing the same title and being horror movie set in Sweden, this film and the Danish cult classic Midsummer 2003 are not related. So maybe there's a third.
Well, this one is 2003. It is Danish, and it's
and
called
Midsummer. And it's set in Sweden. Oh, okay. Never mind. I thought you said it was American.
No, set in Sweden. It is a Swedish movie.
And it's set in Sweden, yeah.
And the lead is named Christian, so there you go.
Okay, so it's the same one, but they're not related.
And starts off with a suicide. So there you go.
I listed it as an anti-key, but maybe it's not. I don't know.
I don't know.
Anyway, I think that's all I have.
Wow. Tim, this is the end of season 5. Look at us. We've been doing this for a while now. It was a lot of fun. That was a great one to end on. I cannot espouse enough how much I really like this movie, in case nobody could tell. This is horror as art, but also keeping the horror roots. It's not a Ken Russell kind of pretentious feel to it, in my opinion. You know, as you've said, some people have said that, but I don't feel that at all. I think it was very well done, very well, incredibly well acted. So
I agree. I'm going to write Stephen J. Schneider and say you are a fool for not including this in 1001 movies you must see before you die.
Definitely. Do it. Do it tonight so we make sure we know. And I guess we want to thank you guys. That's what Tim and I both think of Midsummer, or Midsummer if you're English or American. But we would love to know what you guys think. Do you like it? Do you not like it? Do you agree with us? Do you disagree with us? Let us know in those comments. Go to iTunes and give us a review, because even though you're not a big iTunes person, please do it, even if it's a 3-word review, because it helps us attract more people to find us. If you do like what you're doing, or you miss us over this little hiatus we're going to take, you know, we have a website with all of our episodes on it. We also have a Patreon you can join where you can support us, help keep the show going, and it lets us, you know, continue to maintain that website and other things. And plus, we have special things there. We're going to be working on them over the hiatus, so we'll be working on the Dilithium Chamber, which is our deep dive into each episode of Star Trek, the original series, and X-Files Declassified, which is another podcast and YouTube that we do where we talk about the X-Files and all the scary science fiction-y stuff that it has in it.
Also, I want to add that we are taking our usual summer break. I think we're off for 7 weeks, and we'll be back in mid-August as usual. And next season is shaping up to be a really, really good one.
Yeah.
We don't have four double features. We have six. We have both a themed Thanksgiving section and a themed Christmas section, as usual. We have four Reduxes.
Oh,
where
cool.
We're going to go back and recap our four of our favorite first season episodes, as well as three listener request episodes,
yeah,
where we are going to take suggestions. Like we said, let us know what you want us to do,
yeah,
and we're going to turn them into their own shows. So that's what you've got to look forward to in August, beginning in August.
And let us know what you guys think. Is there a title that you want us to cover and look at and examine? We definitely want to get you guys involved in what we're doing. But, Tim, I guess, you know, for the next few months, I guess I'll see you next time.
Spring break. No, school break. Summer break.
Summer break.
Summer break. School's out for the summer.
Midsummer break. Yay.
Oh, let's go to Sweden.
All right. See you then.
I'll see you there.
Bye.